You know, I want you to imagine that you are driving down a massive sun-baked Texas highway. Like, let's say it's I-35.
Oh, yeah. We've all been there.
Right. And it is late April 2026, so the blue bonnets have been, you know, showing off on the medians. The weather is finally getting that real warmth to it.
It's that perfect spring weather.
Exactly. And you've got the windows down. You are just cruising. Memorial Day is just on the horizon. So you're starting to get into that whole summer mindset.
Yeah, the pool parties, the barbecues.
But then you crest a hill and suddenly you are hitting the brakes. Like, hard. You are sitting in a complete dead stop traffic jam.
Ugh, the absolute worst feeling.
Right. And here is the weird part, the part that makes you like lean out the window and try to look ahead. There's no accident.
Wait, really? Nothing.
Nothing. There's no construction. There are no sirens. It's just this massive sea of cars, and everyone is gripping their steering wheel, staring at the car next to them, completely terrified to merge.
I see where you're going with this.
Nobody wants to make the first move, you know? The road is totally clear ahead, but the collective anxiety has just frozen the entire interstate.
It's a very visceral feeling, that that phantom traffic jam.
Mm-hmm.
It perfectly captures the underlying psychology of hesitation.
Right.
It's not a lack of vehicles on the road, and it's certainly not a lack of people wanting to get to their destination. It's just this collective, unspoken decision to, well, just halt.
Yeah.
Everyone is essentially waiting for someone else to prove it's safe to hit the gas.
And that exact feeling, that phantom jam, is the most accurate way to describe the North Texas real estate market right now.
Unquestionably.
Because traditionally, historically, this is the exact moment when the spring real estate market bursts into an absolute frenzy. Late April into May.
Oh, usually it's chaos right now.
Yeah. The for sale signs usually bloom faster and thicker than the wildflowers. Families are, you know, scrambling to close before the school year ends.
Right. Trying to get settled before summer.
But this year, the energy is entirely different. It is eerily quiet out there. We are sitting in that traffic jam.
The seasonal rhythms that we have all come to expect. That spring thaw leading into a frantic summer buying rush. They have been completely short-circuited.
Totally.
We are looking at a market that is essentially holding its breath.
Which brings us to our mission today. We are unpacking this strange, paralyzed state of the North Texas real estate market, and we want to figure out exactly what it means for you.
Whether you own property, want to buy, or are just, you know, watching your equity.
Exactly. And we are going to be shining a very specialized spotlight on Jack County, because while the macro trends are fascinating, real estate is ultimately intensely local.
It really is block by block sometimes.
Right. So to do this, we are pulling from a massive stack of incredibly detailed sources. We've got the comprehensive Q1 2026 market reports from the North Texas Real Estate Information System.
Ah, the gold standard.
Yeah, compiled by the Texas Real Estate Research Center at Texas A&M University just recently on April 7th.
Those A&M reports are essentially the bedrock for regional market health. They strip away the emotion, the anecdotal panic, and just give us the raw, unfiltered mathematics of what is actually changing hands.
We're also analyzing a really highly targeted real estate market update and strategy guide. This one was designed by David Peet.
David Peet from Peet Realty.
Yes, a veteran agent boasting over a decade of experience navigating the wild swings of North Texas. His analysis is specifically aimed at guiding Jack County residents through this exact strange moment.
It's a very tailored approach.
So, okay, let's unpack this. Let's start by looking at the macro climate. The defining characteristic of the first quarter of 2026, according to, well, all the data in front of us, is a pervasive softness.
Softness is such a fascinating industry term. It's the polite way of saying a market has basically lost its forward momentum.
Like politely saying things are stalling out.
Exactly. It means properties are sitting on the market for weeks or months rather than days. It means price reductions are becoming a standard part of the marketing cycle rather than an act of sheer desperation.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And those frantic, sight-unseen bidding wars of the past few years, they have largely evaporated.
Our sources point to three massive domestic pillars that are causing this traffic jam. Pillar number one is elevated interest rates. We are seeing a really stubborn trend where rates are moving towards 6% and hovering even higher.
Right. Pushing past that psychological barrier.
Pillar number two, historically low inventory. There just aren't enough houses to buy. And pillar number three, which is, you know, intrinsically tied to the first two, is the infamous lock-in effect.
Ah, yes. the golden handcuffs.
Yeah, this is where homeowners absolutely refuse to sell because they are clutching onto those historically low-rate mortgages they secured back in 2020 or 2021.
It's the perfect storm of stagnation. Mm. And the mechanics of that lock-in effect are crucial to understand because it alters the trajectory of entire families.
It really does.
Think about the math from the perspective of a homeowner who refinanced in 2021 at, say, 2.8%.
Which was so common back then.
Right. Their monthly payment on a median-priced home is incredibly manageable. It's an asset, a real financial anchor.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, imagine they have a second child where they start working from home and they decide they need an extra bedroom.
Okay.
If they sell that house now to buy a new one that is essentially the same size, maybe just one town over, but they have to finance it at 6.5%, their monthly payment doesn't just go up. It could literally double.
I was running the numbers on this earlier, and it's just staggering. You aren't just paying more for the new house. You're paying more for the privilege of borrowing the money.
Exactly. The cost of capital.
The financial penalty for moving is so punitive right now that families are literally choosing to cancel their life plans.
Yeah, they're staying put.
They are putting bunk beds in the guest room instead of moving to a bigger house. They are turning down job offers in different cities because they just can't afford to give up that 2.8% interest rate.
It acts exactly like golden handcuffs. You have equity. You have a great rate. But you are effectively trapped in your current square footage unless you are forced to move by a major life event.
Like a divorce or a new job.
Right. A divorce, a death, a severe financial hardship. Mm-hmm. And that removes a massive swath of potential inventory from the market.
Right.
These are people who want to sell, who realistically should be moving up the property ladder, but the math just strictly forbids it.
Golden handcuffs holding everyone on that stopped highway. But here is where the Pete Realty analysis threw a total curveball into the mix.
Yeah, this was interesting.
Because, I mean, we understand the interest rates. We understand the low inventory. But David Pete's report highlights a surprising external factor contributing to this local paralysis.
He brings in the global perspective.
He does. He explicitly points out that unrest in the Middle East is building a tangible sense of paralysis among market buyers right here in North Texas.
It seems disconnected at first glance.
Right. My first instinct when reading that was, how does a conflict thousands of miles away make someone in Jack County decide not to buy a house? But when you start tracing the lines, it actually makes a terrifying amount of sense.
It requires looking at the global supply chain of fear. And, you know, when we talk about geopolitical unrest and looking at this purely through an economic, impartial lens, totally stripping away the political complexities, what we are fundamentally talking about is uncertainty.
Okay, yeah.
Markets absolutely despise uncertainty, but consumers despise it even more.
Right, because if I'm watching the news and seeing instability in a region that produces a massive portion of the world's energy, my brain immediately goes to the gas pump.
And that is the very first domino. Unrest in the Middle East historically triggers immediate volatility in global energy markets.
Because everyone is bracing for a shortage.
Exactly. Investors start pricing in potential disruptions, which spikes the cost of crude oil. But it doesn't stop at the gas pump.
Right, because it ripples out.
A spike in oil prices directly fuels inflation across the entire economy because it costs more to transport every single good you buy.
Oh, wow.
The lumber for new construction, the appliances for a renovation, the groceries on your table, it all gets more expensive.
So if inflation fears reignite because of global energy prices, the expectation is that the Federal Reserve will have to step in.
Correct.
They look at that inflation data and say, well, we can't lower interest rates now. We have to keep them elevated to cool off this inflation.
Which loops right back to our first pillar, the 6% mortgage rates. The global unrest essentially guarantees that the local interest rates won't be dropping anytime soon.
It's all connected.
But there is a second layer to this, a psychological layer that Pete is touching on. Buying a home is the largest, most consequential financial transaction most people will make in their lifetime.
Yeah, it's a huge deal.
It requires you to sign your name to 30 years of debt. Doing that requires a tremendous reservoir of optimism.
You really have to believe that you will have your job in 5 years. You have to believe the economy will hold up.
Yes, exactly. You need optimism about your personal trajectory and the stability of the world around you.
Right.
When the daily news cycle is dominated by global instability, consumer confidence naturally erodes. That reservoir of optimism just dries up.
People pull back.
They decide to wait and see. They stay in their current homes, they hoard their cash, and they actively decide not to make any massive life changes. The geopolitical unrest essentially acts as a localized emotional freeze.
Wow.
It's a bandwidth issue, really. People simply don't have the mental or emotional capacity to take on massive financial risk when the macro picture looks so volatile.
It's that exact fear of merging into traffic when you don't know what's up ahead. You just grip the wheel and stare straight forward.
Perfectly said.
But if we are looking at this paralyzed market, we have to recognize the flip side of that freeze.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the distinction is vital. A paralyzed market is fundamentally different from a dead market.
A dead market implies a structural collapse. Like, it implies that nobody wants to live in North Texas anymore, that the major corporations have packed up and left, that there are no jobs, no population growth, no underlying economic engine.
But we know from every demographic metric that the exact opposite is true.
People are flocking here.
The population of Texas is still booming. The job market remains robust. People are still getting married. Families are still growing. Life is still happening.
The desire for housing hasn't evaporated at all.
Exactly. What we are witnessing is the massive, silent accumulation of pent-up demand.
It's like winding a toy car backward, tighter and tighter. Every month that someone decides to, you know, wait and see, another coil gets wound tighter in that spring.
David Peet's phrasing in his strategy guide captures this perfectly. He describes the market as waiting for the dam to break.
Right.
The water, the pool of willing buyers and eager sellers, hasn't disappeared. It hasn't evaporated into a dead market.
Mm.
It is just pooling up, getting deeper and heavier behind this artificial barrier of 6% rates and global uncertainty.
The pressure is building every single day this paralysis continues.
Yes.
So why should you, listening to this deep dive right now, care about the subtle distinction between a dead market and a paralyzed market?
It's a great question.
Because understanding that difference is the absolute key to timing your own financial decisions. If you look around and incorrectly diagnose the market as dead, you give up.
You get complacent.
Yeah, you let your house fall into disrepair, you stop saving for a down payment, you check out. But if you recognize that it is merely paralyzed, your behavior changes entirely. You prepare. You get ready for the dam to break.
Preparation is the only rational response to a paralyzed market. Because when that dam does break, whether the trigger is a slight, unexpected dip in interest rates, a stabilization in global news, or simply a collective psychological breaking point where people decide they cannot put their lives on hold for another year.
The flood is coming.
The flood of activity is going to be intense. Those who spent the quiet time preparing will thrive. Those who are caught flat-footed reacting to the sudden rush of water will just be swept away.
So let's transition from the theory to the actual physical data on the ground. We need to look at what this paralysis looks like when you translate it into dollars and cents.
Let's look at the numbers.
We are diving into the North Texas Real Estate Information Systems data. And a quick side note for you. If you want to immediately establish credibility when talking to a local real estate professional, or even just sound like you know what you're talking about at a dinner party, you have to know how to pronounce the acronym for this database.
This is so true. It's a dead giveaway.
It's spelled N-T-R-E-I-S. But our sources explicitly point out that locals pronounce it Netcheris.
Netchris.
Right. The last syllable ends in a rus sound, exactly like the word rust, Netrus.
It functions as the ultimate local shibboleth. Cool. If you walk into a brokerage and say N-T-R-E-I-S letter by letter, or try to pronounce it Netrees, everyone in the room instantly knows you're either new to the area or relying entirely on internet research without local context.
Good to know. Okay, so looking at the Netraz Q1 2026 Market Watch report, the county-by-county price volatility is absolutely staggering.
It really is.
We aren't talking about gentle, expected seasonal dips, like the kind of 1% or 2% shifts you see in a normal, healthy market. We are talking about pure whiplash.
It's giving people vertigo.
Let me read off some of these year-over-year changes for average prices, comparing Q1 2025 to Q1 2026. Let's start with Collin County.
A major suburban hub.
Right. Collin County is usually a massive, reliable engine of suburban growth. But in Q1, they are down 7.2%, bringing the average price to $438,250.
A 7.2% drop in a county with the sheer volume and historical relentless appreciation of Collin County is incredibly significant.
Yeah, that's huge.
That isn't a rounding error. That represents hundreds of millions of dollars of collective equity evaporating on paper. It shows that even the most robust suburban markets are bowing under the weight of these interest rates.
And as you move out from the immediate metroplex, the numbers get even steeper. Anderson County dropped 14.7% down to an average of $285,000.
Wow.
Boss County took a massive 18.4% hit, pulling their average down to $200,000. Brown County is down 5.9%, also landing at the $200,000 mark. Callahan County dropped 5.3% down to $232,000.
That's a sea of red.
But then you turn the page to Clay County. Clay County plummeted an astonishing 51.2% year over year, dropping all the way down to $100,000 average.
A 51.2% drop. Let the gravity of that number sink in for a moment.
I mean, if I own a property in Clay County and I wake up, pour my coffee, and read a headline in the local paper that says property values dropped 51%, my immediate reaction is sheer unadulterated panic.
You think the sky is falling?
I'm calling my agent. I'm calling my financial advisor. I'm assuming a toxic waste dump was just discovered in the center of town.
And that panic would be entirely rational if you take the aggregate data at face value. But to make it even more confusing, you have to look at the outlier.
Yeah, the outlier is crazy.
Look at Coleman County. In the exact same economic climate, under the exact same interest rates, facing the exact same geopolitical headwinds, Coleman County actually rose by 10.2%, pushing their average up to $137,500.
Wait, really? It went up?
Yes. So this raises an important question. How do we reconcile this? How can neighboring or demographically similar counties have such violently divergent trajectories in the exact same 90-day window?
It completely defies logic. It implies that half the state suddenly became a desolate wasteland while the other half became a utopian gold rush.
Exactly.
But that obviously isn't what happened.
No, it's not. The key to understanding this whiplash, the mechanism behind these terrifying statistics, is volume, or rather the severe unnatural lack of volume.
The traffic jam again.
Remember our highway traffic jam metaphor? When only a tiny, sporadic trickle of cars is managing to squeeze through an open lane, the speed of those two or three cars dictates the average speed metric for the entire highway.
Oh, I see.
In a normal, healthy real estate market with thousands of transactions happening every month, extreme outliers get smoothed away by the sheer mass of the data.
Right, the law of large numbers.
Exactly. If a $5 million luxury estate and a $50,000 dilapidated teardown both sell in the same week, they're absorbed into the massive ocean of normal middle-class homes selling for around $350,000.
So the average barely twitches.
Exactly. Yeah. But in Q1 2026, the lock-in effect means almost no one is selling. Mm-hmm. The volume has evaporated. So let's dissect that terrifying 51.2% drop in Clay County.
Okay.
If a rural county only has a tiny handful of sales in an entire quarter, say, five total transactions, the mix of what sold dictates everything.
Right.
If three of those five sales happen to be small, older, distressed properties or perhaps mobile homes on small lots that close for $60,000.
Yeah.
While in Q1 of the previous year, the county happened to see three large, sprawling ranch properties sell for $400,000.
Well, the percentage change year over year is going to look like a localized apocalypse.
I get it. Yeah. So the value of a specific average three-bedroom home in Clay County didn't actually drop by half.
Not at all.
The homes didn't lose their value. The mix of what actually managed to cross the finish line in that paralyzed quarter was just heavily skewed toward the extreme lower end.
It is a statistical mirage caused entirely by a drought of inventory. The denominator is so small that any minor variance in the numerator causes massive percentage swings.
That makes total sense.
And the exact inverse is true for Coleman County's 10.2% rise. That 10% bump doesn't mean every single homeowner in Coleman County just gained 10% in equity.
Sadly for them.
Right. It likely just means a slightly higher proportion of nicer turnkey homes, or perhaps a couple of properties with significant acreage, happen to be the ones that changed hands that quarter.
When sample sizes shrink to these extreme lows, one or two anomalous sales hijack the entire economic narrative of the county.
If you live in North Texas, this realization should fundamentally change how you consume news. These aren't just abstract numbers on a spreadsheet for economists to debate.
No, this affects people's decisions.
This is the perceived equity in your home, supposedly swinging wildly from month to month. If you don't understand the underlying math, if you don't realize that a 50% drop might just represent three distressed sales, you will make decisions based on pure panic.
Exactly.
You might panic sell your house at a massive unnecessary discount because you think the sky is falling in Clay County, when in reality it was just a quiet quarter.
And this is exactly why local context, provided by a professional who actually looks at the individual HUD statements and sales records behind the percentages, is vital.
Right. Someone who can read the real story.
You cannot rely on aggregate data or sensational headlines in a low-volume environment. You have to look at the granular reality of what is actually selling.
So let's zoom in even closer to get that granular reality. Let's look at the city-by-city anomalies within the NetTrays data, because the micro-realities are just as bizarre as the county data.
The city data is fascinating.
We are looking at specific March 2026 residential and townhouse sales data, comparing it directly to March 2025. Let's start by looking at the urban core versus the suburbs, because the divergence here is incredibly telling. Take Dallas, for example.
Dallas offers a perfect case study of how high interest rates warp buyer behavior in a major metropolitan center.
The total number of sales in Dallas remained virtually flat. There were 27 sales in March 2025 and 28 sales in March 2026.
So the volume is steady, albeit very low.
Right. But look at what happened to the pricing. The average price dropped significantly, going from roughly $152,000 down to $139,000.
Right.
However, the median price actually rose from $75,000 to $100,000. Now, we all know the basic math difference between an average and a median, but when the average drops while the median simultaneously rises, that implies a very specific structural shift in the market.
It really does. It points directly to a collapsing luxury ceiling and a rising middle class floor.
Expand on that.
When the average falls, but the median rises, it means the extreme high end of the market, the multi-million dollar penthouses, the sprawling luxury estates that historically drag the average upward, they're simply not transacting.
I see.
Those high net worth buyers might be spooked by the geopolitical unrest we discuss, or volatility in the stock market, so they are pulling their money back and holding off. That absence of luxury sales brings the overall average down.
But the median rising from $75,000 to $100,000 tells a completely different story for the average person.
Yes. The rising median tells us that the middle of the market is actually getting more expensive. The baseline cost of entry for a standard home is going up.
That's tough for buyers.
Extremely tough. Even without the luxury sales skewing the math upward, the regular everyday properties are commanding higher baseline prices than they were a year ago. It's market compression. The top is coming down, but the bottom is pushing up.
The ceiling is lowering, but the floor is rising. And compounding this compression is a glaring indicator of softness. Dallas is sitting on 15.8 months of inventory.
That is a staggering number.
It is. A balanced market where neither the buyer nor the seller has a distinct advantage is typically considered to be around 6 months of inventory. At nearly 16 months, the dynamic has completely flipped from the pandemic era.
A 15.8-month inventory means that if not a single new house was listed for sale starting tomorrow, it would take nearly a year and a half to sell off the current stock at the current agonizingly slow pace.
Wow. A year and a half.
Buyers who are actually willing to brave the 6% rates have an incredible amount of choice and leverage in the urban core.
They can afford to be picky.
They absolutely can. They can walk into an open house, point out a flaw, and walk away knowing there are 15 other options waiting for them.
Which brings us to Irving, where that buyer leverage is actually materializing in the data. Sales in Irving dropped from 15 down to 11. Average prices took a hit, dropping from $466,000 down to $403,000.
That's a noticeable dip.
It is. But the really key metric here, the one that signals a profound shift in power, is that properties in Irving are selling at 91.9% of their list price.
That 91.9% figure is the sound of the market softening in real time. It's the sound of reality crashing into seller expectations.
Seriously.
Just a couple of years ago, we were seeing homes regularly sell at 105%, 110%, even 120% of the list price.
Yeah, people were frantically waiving appraisals and inspections just to win a bidding war.
Exactly. Now, sellers in Irving are having to accept roughly an 8% haircut on their asking price just to get a deal done.
Think about what that means practically. If you list a home for $400,000, an 8% haircut is $32,000 off the top.
That's real money.
It is. That means negotiations are officially back. Inspections are back. The buyer, though heavily burdened by the high interest rate, finally has a seat at the negotiating table.
Right.
They can demand a new roof. They can ask for closing costs to be covered. They can negotiate repairs.
The seller is no longer the dictator of the transaction. They are a participant.
Mm-hmm.
And if a seller prices their home based on 2022 comparables, they're going to find themselves sitting on the market for months.
Just stranded.
Eventually chasing the market down with incremental, painful price drops until they hit that 91% threshold where a buyer finally feels they are getting a concession equal to the pain of their mortgage rate.
We have established that the urban core is compressing and softening, shifting power back to the buyer. But let's look out toward the smaller cities, the rural and exurban areas, because the numbers here look like absolute typos.
Oh, they really do.
But they aren't. Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's look at mineral wells. In March 2025, there were two sales with an average price of $79,500. In March 2026, there were, again, two sales. The volume is identical.
Okay.
But the average price jumped from $79,500 to $272,500.
From under $80,000 to nearly $300,000 on two single transactions.
It's wild. And look at Corsicana. In March 2025, two sales averaging $36,250. In March 2026, five sales averaging $232,200. On paper, that looks like a 600% appreciation in 12 months. But wait, it swings violently in the other direction, too. Brownwood went from five sales averaging $40,300 in 25, crashing all the way down to two sales averaging $18,500 in 26.
This perfectly illustrates the danger of small sample sizes that we discussed at the county level, but magnified to the extreme at the localized city level.
Yes, exactly.
If you are a prospective buyer looking to move to Corsicana and you read a regional headline that says Corsicana real estate prices skyrocket 600%, you might think you are entirely priced out of the city forever.
You might think a massive tech conglomerate just announced a new headquarters there, or that they discovered oil under the town square.
Right. You would assume the underlying value of dirt in Corsicana has fundamentally altered. But we know that isn't true.
It goes back to the mix of what is selling. I like to think of it like a local car dealership. Imagine trying to calculate the average price of a vehicle sold at a small town dealership.
Okay, I like this.
On Tuesday, they had a terrible day and only sold two rusty used bicycles that someone traded in. The average sale price for Tuesday is $50.
Makes sense.
On Wednesday, a local business owner comes in and buys a fleet of five luxury SUVs. The average sale price for Wednesday is $80,000.
That is an excellent analogy. The dealership didn't experience hyperinflation overnight.
Exactly.
The value of a car didn't suddenly jump 100,000%. They just sold entirely different commodities. And that is exactly what is happening in these small real estate markets.
A $232,000 average in Corsicana does not mean every house appreciated 600%. Last year, those two sales at $36,000 were almost certainly teardowns, unlivable structures, gutted shells, or perhaps raw land that was miscategorized in the system.
Exactly.
This year, the five sales were likely fully renovated, move-in ready, single-family homes. The homes didn't change value. The inventory mix changed. Critical thinking and media literacy are absolutely required when navigating this data.
Completely. When you read terrifying or overly optimistic real estate headlines, especially about smaller regional markets, you have to relentlessly hunt for the volume metric.
You really do.
You have to ask the critical question, how many homes actually sold to generate this percentage? Because if the number is low, if we're talking about 2, 5, or even 10 homes, the percentage change is essentially meaningless as an indicator of your own home's specific value.
Let's do a quick rapid-fire data check just to hammer home how widespread this deep freeze really is. Midlothian, a city that usually sees steady transaction volume, dropped from six sales in March 25 down to just one single sale in March 26.
Just one.
And Mesquite had only one sale this entire March, and it went for 83.3% of the list price.
One sale in an entire month for a city the size of Mesquite. And the seller had to take a nearly 17% discount just to close that single transaction.
That's brutal.
That is the definition of paralysis. The traffic jam isn't just on I-35. It is statewide, affecting every tier of the market.
So we have painted the macro picture. We are stuck in a high-rate, low-inventory, geopolitically anxious traffic jam where the data is completely skewed by low volume and statistical mirages.
We certainly are.
Now, we are pivoting to the explicit, targeted focus of this deep dive. We are zooming in on Jack County.
Jack County represents a very specific, unique type of North Texas market.
It does.
It sits proudly on page 60 of the massive county-by-county net trez index. It's a place where land value, community ties, and specific property characteristics matter deeply. It isn't just rows of identical suburban tract homes. It's a nuanced, diverse market.
And the overarching message we are pulling from today comes directly from David Peet, and it is deeply targeted at property owners in this specific region. If you are in Jack County or if you own property there, this is your playbook.
Listen closely.
As we mentioned, David Peet of Peet Realty brings over 10 years of experience navigating the wild swings of North Texas real estate. You can find his resources, his market breakdowns, and contact his team directly at PeteChelsea.com.
He's a great resource.
But let's outline his core thesis, because when I first read it, it struck me as surprisingly aggressive for a market that is so thoroughly paralyzed.
It is a strategy rooted entirely in anticipation rather than reaction. It is about positioning yourself ahead of the curve.
Pete's argument is this. Because the market is paralyzed right now by those 6% rates and all that global unrest, the absolute worst thing a Jack County property owner can do is nothing.
You cannot just sit back.
You cannot afford to just sit in the traffic jam, put the car in park, turn off the engine, and take a nap. Because when the dam finally breaks, when rates tick down even 0.5% or consumer confidence ticks back up, a massive flood of pent-up inventory is going to hit the market all at once.
Exactly. Everyone who has been waiting is going to list on the exact same weekend.
Which sounds terrifying.
What's fascinating here is the psychology of pre-market preparation. We traditionally think of selling a house as a switch we flip.
Right.
You wake up one day, decide to sell, you call an agent, put up a sign in the yard, and you wait for offers. That worked brilliantly in 2021.
Oh, for sure.
But in this specific 2026 climate, Pete is advocating for a prolonged strategic staging phase. He is inviting homeowners to contact him now, not necessarily to list their house tomorrow, but to get an estimated selling price based on current harsh realities.
Setting expectations.
And crucially, to ask about ROI return on investment improvements.
Okay, but let me push back on this because I think a lot of listeners will have this exact reaction.
Okay.
If the market is soft, if we are in a paralyzing freeze and buyers are terrified of high rates and global news, why on earth should I spend my hard-earned money fixing up my house right now?
It's a fair question.
Shouldn't I just hoard my cash, keep it in a high-yield savings account, and wait it out? If the dam is going to break anyway, won't a rising tide lift all boats?
You'd think so, but
if thousands of buyers flood the market next year, someone will buy my house as is, right? Why spend money on paint and countertops now?
It's a completely logical question, and it's the exact reason why expert guidance is necessary right now to prevent you from making a costly miscalculation.
Okay, lay it on me.
Let me explain the rebuttal, because it all comes down to the fundamentally altered psychology of the 2026 buyer. In a soft, high-rate market, the buyers who are actually out there braving the elements are incredibly ruthlessly picky.
Because they have the leverage, like we saw with that 15 months of inventory in Dallas and the 91% list price ratio in Irving.
Yes, they have leverage. But more importantly, it's about their available capital.
Ah.
Because their mortgage payments are going to be so punishingly high due to the 6.5% rates, they do not have any spare cash left over after closing.
I didn't think about that.
Think back to 4 years ago. A buyer in 2021 might buy a slightly dated house at a 3% interest rate. Because their monthly payment was so low, they had hundreds of dollars in extra cash flow every month.
Right.
They could use the money they saved on their mortgage to slowly renovate the kitchen themselves or replace the carpets over time. They were willing to buy a project because the money was cheap.
That makes total sense. They bought the house and then they built the equity through sweat equity.
Exactly. But today, that 2026 buyer is stretched to the absolute maximum just to qualify for the loan. Their debt-to-income ratio is maxed out.
Wow.
They're scraping together every penny they have just for the down payment and the closing costs. They can't afford a new roof. They cannot afford to replace the stained 1990s carpets. They cannot afford to fix a leaky foundation.
Right.
They need the house to be absolutely turnkey from day one, because they literally have zero cash left in the bank to fix anything once they get the keys.
Ah, so they are buying the house and they are demanding perfection, not because they're spoiled, but because their bank accounts are empty.
Yes, exactly.
They need a house they can just move their furniture into without spending another dime.
Precisely. Therefore, targeted ROI investments, and the word targeted is crucial here, as advised by an expert who knows the local Jack County buyer, are the only way to stand out when that cash-strapped buyer finally walks through your door.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
We aren't talking about installing a $50,000 luxury swimming pool or a massive outdoor kitchen that you'll never get your money back on. We are talking about the specific, strategic, surgical improvements that remove objections for a buyer who is looking for a reason to say no.
What does that look like practically for someone walking around their house today?
Well, it means fresh neutral paint to make the space look bright and clean. It means updating the hardware on the kitchen cabinets, a $500 fix that changes the whole feel of the room.
Simple things.
It means aggressively repairing any visible deferred maintenance. Mm. If a buyer sees a water stain on the ceiling, even if the leak was fixed 3 years ago, they assume the roof is collapsing and they walk away because they can't afford a new roof.
So if you don't do these things, if you listen to that voice that says, just wait it out and save your money, what happens when the dam actually breaks?
When the dam breaks, a massive flood of inventory hits the market simultaneously. Suddenly, that picky, cash-strapped buyer has 20 houses to choose from instead of two. If your house is the one with the dated kitchen, the worn carpets, and the scuffed baseboards, you will simply be ignored.
Or lowballed.
Or worse, yes. You will be subjected to brutal, insulting lowball offers from investors. You will be the house that sits on the market for 150 days while your neighbors, who spent the freeze preparing, sell in a weekend.
Wow.
Pete's strategy is about ensuring that when the floodgates open, your property is the very first one the premium buyers want. You have to outsmart the paralysis by using this quiet time to prepare. You use the freeze to sharpen your weapons.
So take a moment right now, look around your own space. If you are in Jack County, or really anywhere in North Texas, look at your property with the highly critical, exhausted eyes of a buyer who is about to sign up for a 6.5% mortgage.
It's a sobering exercise.
Are there small, strategic upgrades you could make right now during this late spring season to ensure you are at the absolute top of the pile when the market finally thaws? Because the traffic jam will not last forever. Eventually, the cars are going to start moving, and you want to be in the fast lane, completely prepared when they do.
It requires a profound shift in mindset. You have to stop treating your property just as your comfortable home and start looking at it objectively as an asset, competing for extremely limited attention in a highly discriminating market.
We have covered an immense amount of ground today, and I think we've successfully mapped the contours of this strange moment in time.
I agree.
We started by exploring a North Texas market that is essentially holding its breath, paralyzed by the three massive pillars of 6% rates, low inventory, and the powerful lock-in effect.
All of which is compounded by the psychological bandwidth drain of global geopolitical unrest.
We waded through the incredibly volatile net tro statistics, uncovering the hidden mechanics of how a drought in sales volume can create terrifying statistical mirages.
We learned why Clay County's 51% drop or Corsicana's massive artificial surge are functions of small sample sizes rather than true economic collapse or boom.
We learned the vital difference between a median and an average price when looking at urban compression in places like Dallas, showing how the luxury ceiling is collapsing while the middle class floor continues to rise.
And most importantly, we unpacked David Peet's proactive playbook for Jack County residents. The market may be frozen, but your strategy shouldn't be. You have to use the paralysis to prepare for the dam to break.
The preparation is the insulation against the uncertainty. If you do the work now, you control your outcome later.
Exactly.
Which leads us to the most important takeaway, the direct call to action from our sources at Peet Realty. If you have absolutely any plans on selling, whether it's tomorrow, next month, or even just in the near future as you eye retirement or a job change, you need to call a local expert first to get ahead of this shifting tide.
Don't wait.
Do not try to guess what your house is worth based on low volume, wildly skewed county averages in the newspaper. Get a professional on the ground estimate. Ask about those crucial, targeted ROI improvements and get your strategy locked in before the floodgates open. You can start that process right now by visiting peetrealty.com.
And as we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final thought to consider, something that this deep dive has really brought to the surface for me as we've analyzed all this data.
I'd love to hear it.
We've spent all this time talking about the mathematical lock-in effect of low mortgages, the statistical quirks of low inventory, and the very real paralysis caused by global events thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder if a news headline from across the world and a 2 percentage point shift in interest rates can so completely and thoroughly freeze the local American dream of home ownership. Has real estate stopped being a physical commodity?
Oh, wow.
Has it stopped being about bricks, mortar, and land, and instead become purely a measure of our collective psychological resilience? Are we really buying and selling houses anymore, or are we just trading confidence?
That is a heavy, fascinating question to leave hanging in the air. Are we buying homes, or are we trading confidence? Think about that next time you see a for sale sign. Or, more likely these days, notice the eerie lack of one in your neighborhood. We want to warmly thank you for joining us on this deep dive. And the next time you find yourself sitting in a dead stop traffic jam on a beautiful Texas highway, gripping the wheel and waiting, just remember, eventually, someone has to merge. We'll see you next time.